760 KFMB.
San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Hey, that's almost true. It's almost Richard and Joe. It's Richard, but no Joe. We're Joe Vecchio-less tonight. I think the heat got to Joe, so he went to Chicago to go to his niece's wedding. That's a good excuse with the family. So Joe sent me a text when he got to Chicago. I think that was on Thursday. I think he arrived in Chicago on Thursday, and he told me it was in his text. It was 40 degrees, which was about 40% of what it was at my house in San Diego on Thursday. So he got the, I don't know if that's good weather or bad weather, but it was certainly different weather than we were having here in San Diego. So hopefully everybody's okay, and things, I know everybody's not okay, but hopefully things are getting back to normal for people. What a serious and sad situation that seems to pop up every few years here in the high desert of San Diego with all of the fires. But anyway, so best wishes to Joe with his travel and a safe travel. And when he comes back, he'll come back to fairly decent weather. And we'll just go from there. So anyway, I'll do my best without Joe. I've got two great guests tonight, so we're not going to do much kibitzing like we normally do because I don't want to talk to myself. Just wanted to announce where Joe was. But I've got two great guests tonight. One of our great sponsors, that would be Paul Polito. Paul Polito, CPA with Polito Epic CPAs. Paul, how are you tonight?
Great.
And we have with us actually a former client of the firm because this gentleman sold his business and is doing other things now. A gentleman by the name of Rick Day. Rick, how are you tonight?
Just great. Just great. Thanks.
And Rick has a business called Business by Day that we're going to talk about. And so thanks, gentlemen, for coming in. We also have a special visitor. That would be Morgan Day, who is the daughter of Rick, who is in fourth grade at Santa Fe Christian, a great school. I used to live down the street from Santa Fe Christian on Ida Avenue in Solana Beach. So I've run by it many times. And so she's, I think this is Morgan's first radio experience. We're going to let her say something at some point in the show. And then all your friends can listen, Morgan, and you'll be a star at school. Although I know you already are. So gentlemen, thanks for coming in. Paul, before we get to Rick, you're one of the great sponsors of our show. You are one of the more unique CPAs in San Diego, in my opinion, because you do things differently. Most people think about CPAs. I'm a CPA, by the way. A lot of our listeners know that and don't hold it against me. But a lot of people think of CPAs, especially right now, because tax season just ended about a month ago, almost literally a month ago. About CPAs just cranking out financial statements and doing tons and tons of tax returns. But Paul, you don't really do that, do you?
No. I mostly consult with medium to, small to medium-sized businesses. In fact, that's how Rick and I got started.
Yeah, although his business wasn't even small or medium-sized when we first met.
It was a thought. It was a thought. So, yeah, we met playing...
It was a medium-sized thought.
Yeah. We met playing football at the beach in Oceanside at a friend's kid's birthday party. When did we say that was? How many years ago?
I think we figured 1990.
Yeah.
Because I know I merged into that firm in 89, and you merged in, I think, in January of 90.
Actually, November of 89.
No, November of 89. Yeah, that's right. Just before the holidays. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. We still have one of the employees who's still with us, who started before Richard and
I. Hey, Lori Mattingly. How are you?
She's great.
She started a few months before me. She was early 89. I was, hang on, I got to go back. Oh, I was supposed to be September. No, I was supposed to be the last week of August 89, but my uncle, Luke Riggs, one of the brothers of Bobby Riggs, passed away 3 days before the first day I was supposed to come to the office. So he passed away like on a Friday. My first day was supposed to be a Monday. And so I hadn't even shown up for work yet. I'm like, hey, you guys, I'm out for the first week. I have to bury my uncle. But it all worked out.
Yeah.
But Paul, so when you say you're a CPA that does consulting, what do you mean by that?
Basically, I take the skill set that I've developed over the last 40 years as an accountant and apply it to help clients improve their businesses. So a great deal of my work is spent developing key performance indicators and leading indicators for our mostly medium-sized businesses. And helping them improve, because most small businesses, the founder is really good at what he does, doesn't know how to read a financial statement, doesn't know how to use financial data, and so that's where I come in.
So you what you're saying is you're looking at the future as opposed to,
correct.
Well, you might be looking at the past in the context if you have to base analysis of the future on historical data, but you're not just cranking out history and then stopping like a lot of CPA.
Yeah, a good example of that is a construction company, a client of mine who listens. A lot of clients don't listen, but he does. We had this leading indicator where we monitored their work in process and we monitored their budget, and we could see what was in work in process that was going to help them hit their budget. And we do this to watch the future. And we could see that the profit and work in process was tailing off because the volume was going down. And we said, hey, time to pick the A team and cut your losses.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut the overhead, and they never lost a penny during the big slowdown. And they were a commercial construction company.
Yeah, and probably two-thirds of the people in that business went out of business
exactly.
during the slowdown.
Exactly.
And
so
anybody who could last, obviously, is now thriving again.
Right.
So that's good stuff. Hey, you were also showing me some really – we had dinner, everybody, before the show. We both had a difficult time finding Chef Chin's on Convoy near Balboa, but it is great.
And fast.
Because we had to be fast because we were both looking for parking. But you were showing me a real cool retreat you were running for a client. Can you tell us about doing retreats for clients? Because I thought that was really neat.
Right. Well, I've run retreats before. This time I was just the accountant that showed up at the retreat and pounded on the desk and told them what kind of gross profit they had to get on their jobs. But the COO of this company is a former Marine who's used to running platoons. And so we had the retreat at this Siegel studio on Ruffin Road, and it's set up like an Afghan village.
They use it like in movies and stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we played Capture the Flag with automatic weapons shooting 9mm plastic BBs. It was frightening. and fun.
But how does that facilitate helping somebody with their business?
Well, it's team building.
Right.
This was after the retreat, but it really pulled the team together. It was fantastic.
Yeah, the pictures are pretty cool. I mean, it looked like Paul was in an Afghan village in the middle of San Diego. Some of the billboards and stuff in the distance gave it away, but it was pretty cool stuff. Hey, let's turn to our other guest, Rick Day. Welcome.
Ah, thanks. This is great. It's great to see Paul again after so many years. And I was just kind of reflecting back when I drove down Engineer Road that was my first job after I got out of the Navy, and I was living with my grandmother in Encinitas at the time, and I worked down the street here at a little building called a little company called Ekstrom Industries, and we were making partitions for office partitions for Convair and General Dynamics. And it was there that I was doing this repetitive work, one pallet of materials after another. When I finally said, you know what, I can't do this anymore, and I ended up starting my auto detailing business, which was before I met Paul. But then
you guys met, and shortly after that, you started a business called Thaycom, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Paul and I was working with a mutual friend of ours, and whose son was having a birthday, and we were just on the beach tossing the football, and the company that we were working for at the time was having a really hard time, and we started looking at some of the reasons. And Paul, I think, with his keen eye for the consulting side and understanding the way a business works, was able to say, well, you know, here's the problem. And, there are a lot of reasons businesses fail. But I think in this particular case, one of the key things was that they didn't have the required capital to support the growth curve. And so literally sales grew so fast that they didn't have enough money to buy the equipment to fill the orders. And so then it all kind of imploded. But so a couple years later, I started Daycom Systems. That was about 1992. And needed an office, so I ended up knocking on doors down at this office park in Encinitas and ended up renting a back office from a landscaping firm at that time.
And Daycom Systems, what did it do?
Well, it morphed over the years. We started off in the secondary market for PBX telecommunications equipment, so buying and selling, circuit boards mm-hmm. and telephone sets and all these, disk drives and all this stuff. And then we became an authorized dealer for Lucent Technologies, which was the commercial division of AT&T. and then Lucent later became Avaya. So
Avaya,
we ended up
right.
being the largest Avaya business partner or value-added reseller based on the West Coast.
And you wound up being fairly successful, right? You wound up selling that company a number of years ago?
Yeah, that's, you know, I managed it for 17 years. And basically, I just got to the point where I thought, you know, I can't figure out how to grow this thing. And I tried three or four different ways, mm-hmm. and I kept losing money. And the company was successful, but the thrill was gone for some of the fast growth and the opportunity. And we were right on the cusp of IP telephony and voice over IP.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, did changing technology have an effect on your decision?
Oh, of course. Yeah, huge effect, right? So IP telephony and voice over IP came in, and, mm-hmm. and you got companies like Cisco Systems and Microsoft entering the space. And, you know, it's going to be rough going after that.
So, but to witness that, say, over 17 years from, say, 92 to 2009, you basically saw an industry change entirely, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like I said, we started off as a secondary market mm-hmm. parts house, became an authorized dealer. So we were selling more on a consultative basis mm-hmm. and then offering services to go around that. And then we saw the influx of IP telephony and voice over IP. And it changed a lot. It really did.
Because I'm asking that question as a leading question for when we are talking later in the show about how rapidly things change in this world and businesses that aren't able to really anticipate or, even worse, react to change, usually what happens?
Well, it's as I grew the company's complexion, if you will, changed quite mm-hmm. a bit. And we did go through, you know, there I had one year that I lost a lot of money. And I just had never been through a downturn before, mm-hmm. so I didn't know what to do about that. And it was when the dot-com bubble burst, and I think that was, what, Paul, probably 2002, 2003, something
yeah,
like
I
that?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, our revenues went from $26 million to $20 million in the course of a year, which is, you know, 25% reduction, right? It's a big hit.
Right.
When you're used to growing it,
sure.
10% or better.
Oh, yeah.
Huge.
We had ramped. I mean, we were planning on, you know, 30, 40 million in sales and mm-hmm. 80 people and had just leased a big space and, you know, everything was just going gangbusters.
Yeah.
So I lost money that year and then the next year it dropped down to 15 million.
Whoa.
And so that's another 25% mm-hmm. hit. But I didn't lose money that year because I got ahead of the curve a little bit. But,
sure.
But then that required the business to be re-engineered again and a heavier focus on services and things like that.
So now you're working as a consultant helping businesses with some of these issues, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's my hope. So since I sold Daycom, I thought, you know, I'm just going to take some of the capital from that and invest in other businesses and help them. And rather than being sort of the 100% owner guy and, you know, mm-hmm. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then some, that I wanted to have sort of a, you know, my fingers in a bunch of different pies out there and trying to figure out how to help other people grow their businesses, and it's working well.
Yeah, funny story how Rick came on the show, by the way. One of our great friends, Bill Lirak, who was actually the first guest we ever had in the first show that we did back in late October of 2011. And Rick, you met in a really interesting place, right?
Yeah, it's great. We have a group of friends that get together. We call the Ship of Fools, since I've been dating my girlfriend, I've been invited into this Ship of Fools. It's really it started way before me, but we were in the Caribbean. We were down in the British Virgin Islands on this awesome 105-foot trimaran scuba diving, and there was this couple. There was this guy Bill and his wife Michelle, and that's all I knew. And that's, you know, we met scuba diving down there. So
that's a funny story.
Yeah, it was good.
So your company is called, or your consulting business, or the website is businessbyday.com, which is a nice play on words, given that that's your last name. That was, I mean, if you had been named like McGillicuddy.
Yeah, Business by McGillicuddy.
Yeah, it wouldn't have sounded as good.
Roll off the tongue, no. You know, and I hope there's something there, too, that says, hey, you know, you can still have a life at night, right?
So there, right,
there's
exactly.
some work-life
exactly.
balance.
Business by day.
Exactly.
Hey, Paul, did you have a life at night if you're a CPA during tax season? I'm just curious.
I do.
I know you do. It's because you guys do it a different way. You don't just sit around cranking out gazillions of tax returns. But I think we have to take a break right now. It's 7:18, and I want to take a break. Hey, Justin, let's take a break and come back. Very much appreciate that. We're going to be right back with Rick Day and Paul Pulido on It's Your Money and Your Life. Welcome back to It's Your Money and Your Life. Richard Muscio without Joe Vecchio, who's in Chicago, Illinois. His niece is now married. Congratulations to the Vecchio family. I've met Joe's brother and the family, and that's really exciting news. So Joe will be back in town next week, and you won't have to put up with me as much. But anyway, welcome back. Hey, I want to make sure Morgan Morgan Day's microphone is on because she's never been on the radio before. Hey, Morgan, to get right up to the mic and say hi to your friends.
Hey to my friends Taylor and Claire. So,
thanks for coming in with your dad. What school do you go to?
I go to Santa Fe Christian down in Solana Beach.
I know it well. I used to live down the street. And what's your favorite class over there?
My favorite class is art and PE.
Okay, and you like playing an instrument. What is that?
The instrument I love playing is saxophone.
Neat. You look so tiny, though. Can you lift it?
I can lift it, I know, but, like, I'm not sure if I can play it yet.
Okay, well, it just requires a lot of practice, but if you love it. My son is a musician, and he loves, when he was 7 years old, he said, hey, can I take piano lessons? Because usually parents have to force their kids to take piano lessons.
Yeah.
Then a year later when he was 8, he said, hey, can I take guitar lessons? And we said, you're not going to miss the piano lessons? He says, no, I mean also. I want to take piano and guitar lessons.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were really lucky.
I play piano.
Good for you. I think it's a great place to start. Anyway, welcome. Yeah. Thanks for coming in and letting us know that this is the first time you've been on radio, Morgan. And I hope there's many more times.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Okay, cool. All right, let's get back to your dad, Rick Day and Paul Polito. So before we get into Rick's business by day, which he's doing now, at least in the daytime, maybe not at night. Paul and Rick, you guys were talking about an interesting story before the show started about when Daycom system started and how you sort of figured out ways to pay the salespeople and so on that were helping to grow the company. Who wants to start with that little bit of really interesting history? Because it's not a bit of history, because it really had to do with somebody looking into the future and solving something that really hadn't happened yet.
Well, yeah, I think that's right. When Paul and I met, I mean, at the beginning of the program, he talked a little bit about some of his, you know, his consultative approach with his clients. So, you know, it's not just sort of a CPA, you know, tax advisory service. And so, you know, he and I got together and I told him that I was thinking about starting a business, and we had observed what was happening in the business that I was working for at the time. And so Paul just, you know, he and I sat down and we talked about, you know, inventory and inventory systems and sales compensation and how we could do that and how we could really make them vested partners in the business by paying them on a percentage of the profit. And then you had to design the inventory system around that and so that they could see what the profit was that they were making and kind of get everybody on the same page. So Paul was very, very helpful in those early stages before I even started.
And that really spawned a relationship, because the programmer that put the program together for Rick, a gentleman by the name of Paul Friedman, and I have collaborated on a number of other projects. The tendency for most businesses is to just buy what's available and use it. And a lot of times, that's not going to get you ahead of the crowd. And that was the case with Daycom. I mean, there wasn't anything that did what your program did when Paul put it together. And so what that did is basically it calculated the sales commission on the gross profit instead of the gross sale. And what Rick had been explaining about the business that he'd worked for before is that, you know, the more the salesman sold, the worse the company seemed to be doing. And what they would do, the way they would get the sales, is they would buy the sale by dropping the price.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? If the price keeps going down, the gross profit goes down. The gross profit's what pays the overhead and buys the inventory and everything. So right from the get-go, you started the company by paying a salespeople on the gross profit, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's
right. Made a huge difference. And you know, when you tell a salesman, well, I'm giving you 30% of what you make, that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out to about the same as the standard commission on gross sales. But instead, now the salespeople were trying to buy the stuff right and you know, sell it at a good price. And some of those guys made some pretty significant money.
Yeah, we had a couple really big years where some guys were well into six figures and
going to work in flip-flops and a t-shirt and Bermuda shorts for 6 or 7 hours a day. And
But
that's always a challenge when you're building a team, because usually somebody who's oriented or loves doing sales, they don't really even have an understanding of what it costs to support creating that income. And obviously, if everybody's incentivized in the right way, the business has a better chance of being successful. If people are incentivized in a way that's hurting the business, that's obviously not sustainable. And I think to the extent that you can get somebody vested in what the team is doing, you're just so much better off than if they're just concerned about a sales number.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned is, and I use the book The Great Game of Business a lot to try and get clients warmed up to the idea. But if you know, everybody wants to succeed and everybody wants a company to flourish, and you know, everybody's proud. Most people are proud of the company they work for, or they wouldn't work for it. And if you can find a way to make them partners by letting them know, you know, what their performance does to the bottom line, usually they will do the right thing. They will respond and they will help you. And that particular book is very inspiring. It's I won't go into it now, but it's a great story, and it shows what happens when you show the employees what their impact is on the bottom line. Gets everybody working together.
Yeah, that's critical. We've also had some interesting shows about business collaboration recently. We, of course, had Sherry Arison on, who's the richest woman in the Middle East, talking about when businesses are actually focused on doing good in the world and in their community, how that actually improves results. We also had, when Conscious Capitalism was in town recently, Malcolm Avner, the book Conscious Capitalism by John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, and Raj Sisodia, the professor, just a really interesting concept about how, when you consider all of the interests of stakeholders in your business, as opposed to just very limited interests like shareholders, it's amazing what businesses can do when they really consider more than just the bottom line. So great stuff. And as you say, Paul, it requires a consulting approach, not just looking at history. So Rick, did you take much time off after you sold Dacom Systems? I mean, was it hard? Did you get bored? I'm just curious, when people build a company, it's successful, and then all of a sudden you make a sale and you have free time on your hands. What happens?
Well, it is interesting. So yes, I took a lot of time off. No, I was not bored at all. It turns out that, and I think this is probably true for most entrepreneurs, is that you there's so many interesting things about the world that you want to see. So, you know, I traveled a lot. And in fact, as I was right after I had sold Dacom, a friend of mine who I had bought a new 40-foot sailboat from, and his company had gone out of business. And so he called me, and I was in Mexico at the time on vacation, another vacation. And he said, hey, he goes, my company just went out of business. And I said, well, I'm really sorry to hear that. You know, why are you calling me? Does this have something to do with the boat that I just bought? And he goes, no, he says, I'd really like it if you'd be my business partner and my advisor. And so South Coast Yachts is that company in San Diego. We're the authorized Beneteau dealer. And Barrett is a great guy. He sold me my boat. And so I knew I had a great product. You know, I was a buyer. I owned the product. And I thought, you know what, great product, great city, and a great guy. And so I ended up, you know, backing him, and I've been advising him. So, you know, I volunteered at Connect and SDSI here in town. So I've been certainly keeping very busy.
So you love sailing. Is that one reason why you decided to get into that business?
Well, I got into the business because, again, it was a great product and a great guy. And going to boat shows as part of your work is not bad. And going to, you know, the Paris boat show in December because we have to go to Beneteau meetings was really cool. It's just a great group of people, and it's a great lifestyle, and a lot of fun.
And then you also do business by day. I mean, that's not the only business that you consult with, or that is to say you're trying to grow the consulting practice?
Yeah, so that's the ultimate goal. So the idea for business by day really started when I was volunteering at Connect and SDSI, and I'd watch all of these companies come through. And it's a great organization, really, for helping, you know, early stage businesses come up, and they give them great advice on, you know, how to build a pitch so that they can raise money, and how do you build, you know, a sales and marketing team, and how do you build a management team, and how do you finance your business and your growth, and what about inventory? And so, but it occurred to me that we were answering the same questions again and again and again and again in these early stage businesses. And I knew a lot of the answers. And so, I mean, there's many, many volunteers down there that also know the answers. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a better way that I can package this and hit a wider audience with it. So I just started writing, and I just decided to do a blog. And then that turned into a podcast, and now that's just been heard. And I guess after 2 weeks, I'm in 30 countries. And
oh, neat.
Oh, it's crazy. So, yeah.
I want to talk about your blog and your podcast when we come back from break. I know we have to take our bottom of the hour break here to pay the bills. It's Your Money and Your Life with Rick Day and Paul Pulido, Richard Musio, but no Joe Vecchio. Sit tight. We will be right back.
It's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
Welcome back. It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio, but no Joe Vecchio, who is in Chicago at his niece's wedding. Hey, I want to thank all of our amazing sponsors. You can learn a lot about them on our website, iymoney.com. But again, UBS, Mr. Michael Carantra, and Mr. Drew Freitas couldn't do it without you guys. Right across the street from UBS, right across Prospect Street in downtown La Jolla, Regions Bank, the best business bank here in San Diego. Sean Puckett was in last week, did a great show with one of his clients, Eric Rockwell from Centrax IT. So Regions Bank with Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton, San Diego's best business bank. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, greatest business valuation resource I've ever met, helping business owners understanding how the risks in their businesses can be improved to drive better results. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Brenda Geiger with Geiger Law Group, asset protection and estate planning. Brenda has a great continuing education event coming up for CPAs and wealth advisors and attorneys on June 6th at an amazing place, the Museum of Making Music in Carlsbad. It's worth it to go to the CE event just to be able to wander around the Museum of Making Music when it's not crowded. What an amazing place. Paul Polito, CPA, our guest tonight with Polito Epic CPAs and his partner, Don Epic. Hey, Paul, don't you make guitars too?
Yes.
Okay, we'll talk about that maybe later. You like the Museum of Making Music?
I do.
It's an amazing place. Anyway, Polito Epic CPAs, best CPA firm here in San Diego County, hands down. Jason Kruger, also a CPA with Signature Analytics. Jason is very specialized. He is a CFO company, assists companies in that role who don't need a full-time CFO. And then last but not least, the Lombardi Group, the LG Experience. Great CE event coming up for CPAs on June 16th, 17th, and 18th at La Costa. That's a great place for an event. The Lombardi Group helps CPAs and wealth advisors provide much more value for their very best, what we call their A clients. If you want to find out more about our great sponsors, just go to the website, iymoney.com. Also, thanks to Courtney Lauver with PopX Graphics, who keeps up the website in impeccable fashion. Hey, Paul, played a question about websites. You guys have a great one. I always do this funny thing. I like to go to CPA firm websites and read the first line on their website, and it usually says something like, founded in 1946, we're one of San Diego's oldest and largest CPA firms. Which doesn't really excite me because most people don't wake up in the morning and go, I want a really old, really big CPA. You guys got a really neat one. Why'd you guys decide to do that?
I decided that when we were going to do our website that it was going to appeal to people that were below 40 years old. Because
those young people.
Exactly. the 30-somethings, basically. And the reason is because people my age don't use the web to find professional services, but because I have 5 children and they're grown and I know what they do.
How many grandkids?
10.
Okay.
So I know where they shop and I know how they shop. And so I hunted around for a firm that I felt was up to the task. And we interviewed several firms. And we finally settled on the firm that we did. It was Lion in Solana Beach that did it for us. And it's been redone a few times since. But basically, we wanted to use a lot of pictures. Mm-hmm. And ironically, the first client that we got was 55 years old, had over $1 million in the bank. But this proved that we hit our target audience.
Right.
She had just hired her daughter, who had just graduated from USD, and said, find me a new accountant.
Okay.
And she found us on the web.
On the web, cool.
So cool it worked. Stuff.
Yeah, well, I also love the, I guess it's the tagline of your firm. It says, beyond the balance sheet. I just think that's really cool because most CPAs don't go beyond the P&L and the balance sheet. And your tagline is beyond the balance sheet, which of course pushes you into the future, which is where CPAs need to be these days, right. I think, to truly provide value to their business-owning clients.
Most of what we do is planning.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, Rick Day, I've been checking out some of your blogs and podcasts. You've got some great ones. And one of there's 3 or 4 that are real favorites of mine, but one is the difference between a situation and a problem for a business owner. What's the difference between a situation and a problem?
Well, I really have to credit my girlfriend on that one. That was her statement. But it really does ring true. You know, if you've had problems in your life and you've had, you know, serious illness or deaths in the family or you know, a divorce or something like that. Those are things that are really, really tough to deal with. And so going through a few of those myself, you know, when you have a business problem that money can, you know, her famous saying is, if money can solve it, it's a situation.
Okay.
It's not
like
a problem.
That.
So
that is such a true statement.
Yeah, though. Absolutely.
It's such a true statement. And then you've got a great one that, I mean, I love this because we talk about leadership a lot on this show. You know, we're sort of a funny business show because we talk about people and knowledge as opposed to money per se. And so leadership is a big topic. You've got a great podcast called You Stand for What You Tolerate. What does that mean?
Well, for me, it's about it's really all about defining your values in the business. And, you know, I think so many people get caught up in, you know, the balance, you know, this is a beyond the balance sheet thing or beyond the income statement. It's not just, you know, how much money your company is making and what the bottom line looks like. It's how you're doing it. And you as a business owner, I think, get the opportunity to define, this is the way we're going to treat our people. This is the way we're going to treat our customers. This is the way we're going to treat our suppliers. And so when I want you to come into business and I want you to do it my way and it ends up being a good formula, but that set of values weaves its way through the entire business. And so
that's part of culture, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It defines the culture of the business, and you really have to enforce it for it to mean something. So you stand for what you tolerate. If you let people run all over it, then you agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Another great one. But Paul, I'm going to ask you to comment because I run into this a lot being a family office specialist. Hiring friends and family is tricky. That's an understatement.
A real understatement.
Why is that?
Well, it puts a whole new dynamic. It takes performance out of the equation a lot of times, and that's not good. Though I have used it, three of our greatest accountants were kids that I met through my own kids.
Right, but you met them through your kids.
But I met them, right. And I, you know, they weren't family, and I recused myself from the hiring decision,
right.
But I introduced them to the firm. But what was wonderful is I saw their work ethic. I got to see that they knew how to get up in the morning and go to work, and I knew that they were bright. I knew they had a personality, and it's a big part of our culture. You know, we've got people that have been with us for 25 years, and we got people that are at the beginning of their career, and everybody gets along famously because we all work hard together.
Yeah, the legacy of the CPA firm is really, really interesting because, you know, I used to be an owner of that firm, and of course, we had a retirement party for one of our former employees who moved down to the Del Mar office, which I sold about 10 years ago, and I was looking around the table, realizing that I had relationships with people there that spanned more than 20 years, and I think five or six cases, which is, I think, is a really neat thing because a lot of CPA firms don't tend to last, or law firms especially, but CPA firms as well. And when you find longevity or some form of legacy, I mean, that's a really cool thing in this business because it doesn't seem to happen often enough, in my humble opinion. Yeah, I love this one. Both of you guys can comment on this. The best time to fire someone is the first time you think about it. Not the second or third, right? The first time. Rick, why is that?
Well, this, again, a lot of my stuff, you know, other people get credit for. A great friend of mine in telecom said this to me once, and my first reaction was like, oh, man, that's really harsh. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. You got to give people a chance. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, I think in business, you do give people chances, and you talk to them, and you reprimand them, and you call them in, and you say, hey, your performance needs to improve. And the first time, usually what happens, I think, and I found, was that the first time I thought, God, I really ought to fire that person, you know, and then you go into, well, I'm going to affect their income, and now I got to find somebody else.
And nobody's going to like me. And
yeah, you know, I was just set working on this other project, and now I got to go backwards and I find somebody to fill that slot. And so you come up with all of these excuses on why you should put it off. And I think you should just go ahead and do it, get it done, you know, do it the proper way with HR, but just get it done. And you're going to have to take that step back because there's so much time you spend just grinding on it and thinking about it. And I should have just pulled the trigger way earlier.
It wastes a lot of business oxygen, doesn't it?
No question. Yeah, big opportunity.
Yeah, it's the energy that gets sucked out.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you're not helping the person because it's not a good fit for them. And especially we said this a lot when we were encouraging our clients to thin their ranks when the recession hit. The sooner you let them go, the more opportunity they're going to have.
Yeah.
You hold on, and then let them go. What have you accomplished?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I agree.
A bunch of money.
Before we take our break, I mean, I just want to make the point that But you're actually helping somebody usually when you let them go, because if they don't fit for whatever reason, whether it's cultural, performance related, whatever the reason might be, you're actually freeing them up to actually find something that's a better fit for their life and their interest and so on, as opposed to really firing somebody.
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, let's take our last break. If we might be able to do that on It's Your Money and Your Life. And we're going to come right back after our last break to finish up with Rick Day and Paul Pulido. Stay with us. Hey, time flies when you're having fun on It's Your Money and Your Life. So whether you're doing business by day or radio by night, it's great stuff. Hey, I want to make sure everybody has everybody's websites. Paul Pulido, Pulido Epic CPAs, PulidoEpic.com, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then business by day got businessbyday.com. But Rick, your little videos, you would find that under 5 minutes to a performance business, right?
Yeah, that's right, on iTunes and Stitcher, 5 minutes to a performance business.
Okay, and they're 5 minutes basically because you believe everybody has at least 5 minutes to invest in themselves.
Yeah, you know, roughly, it's most of the blog posts that I've done are 500 to 1,000 words. They take you 3 to 4 minutes to read silently. It takes a little longer to actually read that out loud. And I thought, gosh, you know, 5 minutes, everybody's got 5 minutes, so.
Yeah, but let's say you own a business. How much time a day should you spend with yourself working on your vision, your direction, and all the things, you know, without all the clutter hitting you?
Well, I think, you know, how much time should you and how much time is realistic is probably a different question. But I would say if you can spend an hour or two a week on your business, working on your business, but out of the details, more into the strategy and the overall thing, that probably is a good goal.
And Paul, what do you think in terms of strategic planning and forward-looking planning? Is that enough, do you think?
I think that's it's constant, but especially now, things are changing so rapidly. You can do a long-range plan, but you got to adjust it every year. Sometimes you got to adjust it every 6 months.
Actually, my joke is if it worked, it was a plan. But no, you're right. Things just move really, really quickly. Hey, Paul, speaking of things moving quickly, the accounting profession is changing a lot, though, right? I mean, demographically in particular?
Yes. We have we had a big trough after early 80s. Most of the analytical people went into computers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this big trough, particularly in the male population in accounting. There's almost no accountants under 50 until you get down to the upper 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because all those folks went into IT and computer sciences and stuff. It's actually the Enron scandal that finally piqued people's interest in accounting, and we started seeing more accountants in college. But there are a lot more women in accounting, and it's really changed the way accounting firms do business.
Yeah, I mean, I think the changes have been good. Things like flex time, part time. I think
we love it, especially for busy.
Yeah, because if you're in a seasonal business, if you're doing tax returns, you're seasonal anyway.
Yeah, and we do about 50% of our chargeable hours in 11 weeks.
Yeah, and that, in the bigger picture, I've found that women are more collaborative than men, which I think is good for the profession. Although you were making an interesting point, I don't know that it's necessarily good for accounting standards and stuff because they aren't as black and white as they used to be, which is sort of the result of collaboration.
Yep.
But all in all, I think it's good because I think when I came into the business 35 years ago, it was a very collegial profession, and then it sort of didn't become that way for a while, and then it's sort of moving back to that. I think it's just because everybody's so connected.
Very much so.
Rick Day, I wanted to save your best for my last. You've got a great one called Stop Snuffing Your Business, You Ball Hog, and it sort of talks about back in the day when you were watching – you know, kids play stuff. If you were the kid who was always dribbling the ball, shooting the ball, not passing, what's that one about?
Well, that one's really all about delegation, and it's probably the number one problem that I see in most businesses is that you have a founder, you have somebody that starts a business, and they try to do everything, and they have a hard time handing off things. When I started Daycom, for example, it wasn't so hard for me to hand off my bookkeeping because I was terrible at it, right? And it wasn't so hard for me to hand off packing and shipping and unboxing things because, you know, I just didn't enjoy that. But, you know, handing off some of the more important tasks, like I'm a sales guy, started a sales company. I'll never forget how scared I was when I handed off my largest clients to two salespeople that I had hired and had trained under me for a while to where I just wasn't selling anymore. And so this article really is all about not only how to delegate, but what your people get out of that delegation and what you get out of it.
Yeah, because you can't grow unless you do that.
Absolutely.
Hey, Rick Day, very much appreciate it. Paul Polito, very much appreciate it. Morgan Day, welcome to the radio business. You are going to be a star someday.
And
have fun. I guess you're back in school on Monday, so.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Craig Blanke, Justin Hart, Dave Sniff, couldn't do without you. Joe Vecchio, safe travels. It's your money and your life. We'll be back next Saturday. Everybody, the heat's finally breaking. Have a great week. Thanks again.